Welcome to the Boldly Going Nowhere podcast. I'm Sean Holmes. You might be thinking to yourself, what the hell is going on, and where's my normal intro? To that I say, it will be here in a moment. But first I have to tell you what the hell is going on. We've had some technical difficulties with the recording equipment that makes the audio quality of the first half of this interview sound like, well, ass, basically. And the other half sound great as usual. There might be some audio gaps in the conversation. And to that I will separate the audio clips with the audio of this clip.
This is the Daedric God of Madness, Shea Korath, and you're boldly going nowhere.
So I hope this separator is up to par with our listening audiences. If you have any questions, comments, or even complaints, feel free to toss us a line at bgn@castwavestudios.com. That's bgn@castwavestudios.com. Here is the MAGFest 2013 episode with interview guest Wes Johnson.
The Internet, the final frontier.
Hey, you're listening to Boldly Going Nowhere. It's a podcast. You listen to it with your ears. This is a special guest interview recorded at MAGFest 2013, Music and Gaming Festival in National Harbor, Maryland. 4 straight days of music, video games, and wild debauchery. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere.
Please hello, sir.
Yeah, wonderful to talk to you.
Yes, Wes Johnson, you're on UV profile. Enjoys telling the world that you are an actor, a stand-up and improv comedian. You've worked in radio, TV, film, and even video games.
Even video games, and I can make a mean egg.
Ooh. Fantastic. Yeah, can you poach?
Well, I do poach most of the eggs illegally.
Those poor creatures.
Yeah. And he beats them unmercifully until they're really mean.
That's right. They are mean eggs. I mean, seriously, you mistreat them long enough, and they get a very thin shell.
Mm-hmm. Tired of living with the same 12 or the same 11.
Not personally. I'm tired of walking on eggshells anyway. But, well, a very pleasant surprise. You happen to bring some friends.
Yes. With me here, this is Mike Rawson.
How do you do?
Known on IMDb as Michael Rawson, but you might know him better from Fallout 3 as Gob or Colin Moriarty. Mm. And how many other decrepit characters?
Most of the ghouls and the professor.
The professor, was it like Wesco?
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Based on Lesko, based mm-hmm. on your Jerry Lewis fixation?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
That's where that comes from. He was in the mission Those.
Yes.
The giant ants.
Yeah, the giant ants.
The giant ants.
Yeah.
And over here we've got graphic artist Brad Dismukes, who's hiding over there in the corner.
Oh, it's just the way I comb my hair. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to podcast.
Mm-hmm. So how are you, Brad?
So, but we're having a nice time here at MAGFest, and I mean, it's okay to let people know we're here at MAGFest.
Yeah, that's it.
We're here.
Anything goes. It's
we had a great time. We did the Voice of Palooza today, and. We actually took the first 26 mm-hmm. minutes of Pulp Fiction, the screenplay, and gave characters to different people to use their most popular video game character voice as different characters. So we had John Patrick Lowry, who plays Sniper in Team Fortress 2. Mm-hmm. He was Pumpkin. The characters in the beginning, there was Pumpkin and Honey Bunny, and Honey Bunny was Karen Carbone, who's wonderful. She played Moira Brown in Fallout 3.
Oh, wow.
So she was Honey Bunny, and frankly, the more profane Honey Bunny got, the better with the sunshiny quality of Moira Brown.
I have to say, sir, I sincerely hope that someone videotaped that. I would have gone, but I was actually in a rock band vocals tournament.
Oh, wow.
I lasted way, way longer than I should have with as bad a cold as I have right now.
So you and I both are fighting the laryngitis, huh?
I don't think it's laryngitis. Just about everyone I've talked to is ill from something or other. I mean, normally I play...
Well, here at a thing like this, it's mostly...
That's nice.
Scabies, crabs, the clap.
I was planning on being sick after a convention, not before.
Well, you know, why not? Spread some joy.
I like a nice schistosomiasis.
Well, as long as you can get the sauce.
I think they charge extra for that.
Do they? Really?
Yeah. So I've been screwing up the temerity to say that really Fallout 3 is one of my favorite games of this generation. And with both of you here, I'm so tempted to ask if Uncle Leo and Gob could argue about what to get on their pizza or something.
Really, you don't want more of your human flesh.
I hate pepperonis.
What is a pepperoni?
But I love those little fish. Whatever the hell else they are.
Fish. I like fish, but I don't like to fish for fish.
And I want it burned and ice cold.
You're a strange man.
You don't know the half of it, pal.
That was really impressive. I actually remember when I was playing through the game for the first time, I thought that those voices just sounded so inhuman that I figured that you
And now that you see this, you know it's true. And,
I figured that you guys needed a filter or some visual.
Not much.
Sort of that. No, that's
just one of the things you're talking about. People ask that and say how much processing goes in. Sometimes there's processing, but you need to have the voice in order for it to happen. I mean, the Super Mutants, for me, the whole session with the Super Mutants was just 4 hours of, like, you know, veins popping out of my head trying to do it. And like Uncle Leo, he was okay, but Fox was tougher because Fox is like highly intelligent, whereas the Super Mutants with the FEV strain that they have, which is different, by the way, than the West Coast FEV.
Oh, believe me, I know.
Yeah. What happened here, wait a minute, got a message. Oh, it's Bethesda, my NDA just kicked in. No. Basically, what were we talking about?
Process
of the voicing and the processing with the Super Mutants. It was just like exhausting. But you've got Fox, who's trying to get this intelligence out of these vocal cords that were not built for speech. It's like a gorilla. It's like trying to push Socrates' thoughts through a gorilla's voice box. Mm-hmm. So it was very painful for Fox even to get that out. Now, Mike, who's great with his, all of his ghouls, I mean, you listen to that voice and you can just hear the seared flesh, the flaky skin. And as you can look at him, you can see it.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that we don't have a camera running right now. But,
I think we do.
I was going to say the audience is probably grateful.
I wouldn't mind getting back to Fox, but really quickly, I just discovered you're also the voice of the Protectrons. The
Protectron robots.
1950s style boxy robots.
I love, my favorite part of that was like the Protectrons. Boy, my voice is pretty rough today, but when they would suddenly break out and go, Nuka-Cola, you know, in the middle of it. But welcome, Bill Grum, and the voice has a meter that changes as it speaks. And then they threw a little processing on it, and then you have but I wanted to do the Protectrons also for Fallout New Vegas. I didn't get a chance to, so that was kind of a bummer.
Well, darn.
Yeah. I figured the same company would make the Protectrons. I understand the difference between the mutants on the West and East Coast.
Those are the West Coast Protectrons.
That sound like Chris Tucker for some reason. I don't get that. It's like people were telling me that they thought that I had taken my voice for Hermaeus Mora from a drugged-up Bane from Batman. But you know what? I predated the voice of Bane
by
a couple of years. So if anybody's copying anybody, Mr. Bane, it's you.
Okay, well, both Sean and Brian do some pretty kicking Bane impressions.
Yeah?
Let's save it to
the end.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Please.
Of course, I visited your panels last year, and the one phrase I definitely took away from it, from the experience, is you Klingon bastards, you killed my son.
Did you? Were you the Klingon bastard? Killed my son. Tomorrow I'm going to do, for the first time, I used to do a song on a radio station called WHFS, and it was You Klingon Bastard.
Yeah, I found it on YouTube.
Well, I'm going to do it live for the first time ever tomorrow at my panel.
Oh, nice. Right.
Yeah, and it'll be awful. Just awful.
But, it reminded me that you are, surely you are a large fan of Star Trek.
I am. I'm a Shatner fan. I've made fun of Shatner. I did the William Shatner School of Acting on Funny or Die. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, I've studied at the William Shatner School of Acting. I've studied at the William Shatner School of Acting.
Watch out, he's about to sell his price line.
So I felt that I would take this opportunity to... I've had my own reasons in which whenever I... the past couple of months, there are a lot of Star Trek fans go to my social club, and I've asked them all this question. I'm really amused by the response, but if I may, what can you tell me about the original series episode, Cat's Paw?
Cat's Paw? Was that the, that wasn't the Kirk girl switching, which one
no,
was
that
it?
Give me turn about.
Yeah, I give
it
three
sons. Right, the last one.
And you've just answered my question, in which, how badly a Star Trek fan professes to know absolutely everything, everyone has to be reminded what Cat's Paw is.
Wait a minute, Cat's Paw, isn't that the one where they had it was like a faraway kind of, planet with a had sort of like cone-shaped buildings nearby, and there was a woman who was like a she wasn't a Vulcan. Was she a Vulcan or was she a Romulan?
I actually don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, actually, but I still know there was a girl in like this sort of shimmery, gossamery kind of outfit. Was
okay,
it not? Spock was heavily involved.
Okay, that was probably the Enterprise incident. In which
the Caspar was the wizard guy and
you got it, thank you.
Yeah. And he had your dancing around the weird creatures.
Mike Hansen.
Yes, it's the one with the space wizards.
Yeah,
and I profess that it is.
It was a Halloween episode.
I profess that it's among the most crushingly mediocre of all of the series, and so much that absolutely no one can remember.
Well, crushingly mediocre is one thing, but I mean, if you get so bad that it's awesome, like Spock's brain, you know. It's
I love the eggs and the cones.
Yes, I always did love the Eggie Booth's essay long review on Spock's brain, in which they took great glee in the fact that you can control Spock with a garage door opener that has 8 buttons on it.
I mean, man, look,
8 buttons is all you need.
Look at this. Every one of us today are now carrying around our own tricorder and communicator in one. I loved the phones of about 6 years ago because you did have the flip phone. There we go. That
all right.
Somebody has a flip phone. You can flip it, and it's like the old Star Trek thing. I mean, even on Boston Legal. There you go. Look at that.
Oh, there you
sweet.
Are.
See, that's what you need.
Sweet.
The Bluetooth communicator attaches to your phone.
Yeah.
That's that. Somebody needs to make that.
Eventually, they'll just put it in your head.
Find much information on gross national product.
Oh, gross national product was a comedy troupe here in Washington, D.C., and we would do political humor for years and years. Worked with Brad over here.
Yes, I worked with him for 11 years.
He worked with him much longer than I did.
11 years.
Brad was their sound guy and graphics guy extraordinaire. I was with a troupe called Fresh Victims, which basically I loved our design, logo design was a body chalk outline with a smile across the face. Mike Rossin here was a member of the Video Pirates, which was one of the bigger comedy duos of the 80s.
And Wes would sometimes sit in with us. I was Captain Cable. My partner was old Ben Skinbeard, the Sailor the Third, PhD, shut up. And I was his full
Esquire.
Esquire. And Wes would sometimes drop in as Peghead.
Yeah.
Peghead.
Well, yeah, you know, of course, once the noggin is removed, it's replaced with nothing but hollow wood.
I feel like I've seen that in a Ziggy cartoon once before.
Again, Ziggy stole from us that son of a bitch.
The question
I'm not allowed to say bad words here.
No, you could call Ziggy a big nose bastard and, you know, no one would be offended.
So, or
anything, that matter.
So real quickly, how much better was the gross national product than the Capital Steps?
When I was with gross national product, they were way better. And then they dropped well below it when I left.
Well below,
Sorry. They'll probably hear this later. Of all the things that I've done since leaving gross national product, the only thing they would hear would be that.
Well, I'll,
I'll repeat it. I mean, that was their well after you did, and
sorry.
Freaking yikes.
Sorry, the capital steps are great for what they are. Mm-hmm. I especially love, there's a guy named Richard Paul who sang with them. It's very funny. And Richard, I remember one of my favorite stories about him was when he was on a moped and he was driving through a bad section of town. And the guys started chasing him, yelling, "That's my moped." And they were in their tennis shoes almost faster than Richard was. But, you know, with that little stress and strain trying to push that moped just a little bit faster, please. I still, whenever I think of the Capitol steps, all I think of is a very heavily sweating Richard Paul trying to gun a moped down the middle of the streets of D.C. You know, so, I mean, that's funny.
I wish him luck.
That's funny. You know, I can't, there's nothing else that comes to mind about GNP that's funnier than that.
I wish that whenever I think of Washington, D.C., I could think of something other than the traffic. But we came here from Frederick, and Justin's GPS wound us through Baltimore, down through Laurel, and just basically hugging essentially the west coast of Chesapeake Bay, and we all looked at it and said, good job.
Yeah.
We were all cursing Magellan's name.
Well, you know, the GPS really is just their initials for the little old lady that's giving directions named Gladys P. Smith. And Gladys gets confused occasionally.
She
has a lovely voice, though.
She does. I've switched mine to Australian. She's better that way.
She must sound really badass.
She is. She's
and
very badass.
And around you of the 80s.
I want to get Ellen McLean to do my GPS. Have a GLaDOS GPS.
She's going to be in an upcoming movie, Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim, essentially playing GLaDOS.
Basically, they wanted her. They loved her. They asked the folks over Valve if they could use her. And she's going to do it. And we're all very excited. We were on the panel today with John Patrick Lowry. And I actually have a phone message on my phone right now from Ellen, which was, we called her and pranked her, started to prank her yesterday on our voice panel. John St. John Duke Nukem got on with his bows of steel, and he got on
That's
and started
good.
Talking to her.
We interviewed him earlier, actually. Yeah, that was actually
it's
pretty good.
Weird
what
John is.
Yeah. Wes, what do you think of Power Armor?
Power Armor?
I'm sorry.
I love Power Armor. Well, you asked Wes.
Thank you. That's why you're a comedian. You gave me the unexpected response. Thank you.
Most of the folks today knew me better as like Shea Gorath from the Elder Scrolls or the Imperial Guard walking around all the time going, "Halt, criminal scum."
Yeah, I know, and sadly, I've never beat Oblivion, and I have yet to start Skyrim. I just know that if I do...
Did you play Shivering Isles?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that's the one to do, lad.
I definitely saw some Let's Plays online. And I especially liked I remember walking to your throne room, and there's this giant stone bed with like 10-foot tall spikes just kind of sitting out there in the lawn. And I remember like, oh, whatever that's for. And so of course the guy who did the Let's Play must have read my mind because he ran right up and punched you in the face.
Yes.
At which point he teleported. He teleported about 5 miles above those spikes and
enjoyed the view.
Fell for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. I mean, you have to save before you do something and shoot Shea Gorath. However, if you want to hear his whole line, I suggest you go from the other side of the room and shoot him with an arrow, because then he'll speak his whole line as he's walking to you. Otherwise, if you're too close, you know, go right up there and poosh, hit him in the face. It's like, "You should not have," and you're gone. You don't get to hear his whole line.
I'll have to remember that. I almost forgot. As I was looking up information about Fresh Victims, it seems that the Washingtonian magazine sung your highest praises by saying that Wes Johnson suggests the spirit of John Belushi inhabiting the frame of Jackie Gleason.
As just to say I'm fat.
I was going to say that. That's what it sounded like to me.
It's like the spirit of John Belushi, he's dead. In the frame of Jackie Gleason, he's dead and fat. So, you know, actually, they meant to be nice. I'm pretty sure they meant to be nice. But that being said, I've lost 90 pounds in the past 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And hopefully I will be no longer inhabiting their frames and will be able to continue working on my own.
This is the Daedric God of Men, is Shea Korath, and you're boldly going nowhere.
Oh man, great. I bring up sex addicts and neuters and immediately your censorship machine goes into pause mode.
What's with that? What is with that?
It wasn't me.
Anyway, that was a lot of fun, but you got to see the NC-17 version or you will not be able to watch Tracy Ullman pick up a bottle with her cooter in the old folks' home.
It has been so long since I've heard the word cooter.
It has nothing to do
Wasn't
with the
Newts. Wasn't that Yale fraternity or sorority initiation?
I'm pretty sure I've heard the word cloaca more often than cooter. But
well, that's really sad.
But then again, I am a sinist.
Well, you weren't hanging around with the... I think they had some Southern Belle cosplayers that you could have gotten involved with last night. Anyway.
Involved.
Anyway, Mike here did come out on the day we shot at the Holiday House where Selma was wearing her prosthetic breast, her giant like quadruple D latex breasts for the nude dancing scene. And Mike got to come out, and you were very happy about that.
Oh, that was swell. Yeah, I didn't think I'd even make the cut. But
well, you were a biker. You look great.
Big old face.
Listen,
that was cool.
Take a look at Mike. This is a face that was meant for a John Waters film. Mm. And you know who else loved him?
That's
Wolfman Jack. When I used to work with Wolfman Jack, I used to do national radio with him, and I'd bring Mike around, and Wolfman would be like, "Ah, man, I love this guy. He's a character."
First time I ever met him, I went down. I'm looking for Wes. And there's Wolfman, and he's on the air, and then breaks for an ad or something, and he looks up and he sees me, doesn't know me from Adam. He goes, "I know you're somebody," and started from there. What a nice.
It was great. We drove down together after Wolfman passed away after the last show we did. Mike and I took the trip down to his funeral. Did you go to the Thursday or Saturday? Thursday. No, you went to the Saturday with me. Which was the big to-do.
Right.
Wolfman Jack. Do you guys know Wolfman Jack?
I've heard of him.
American Graffiti. You ever see that, man? You ever see the movie American Graffiti?
I meant to, but then I lost so much respect for George.
You haven't seen American Graffiti or A Dirty Shame. You've got to get this guy on it.
He was the guy.
He was the
other DJs modeled themselves after.
Well, we went down there. They had the first funeral was on a Thursday, and it was a very quiet affair with the family, and went up there and got to speak in front, and they had a local preacher and a local choir. And then they recast it for Saturday when we went down, and they had, like, Robert Schuller was the preacher suddenly, and a world-renowned African choir was there singing for him. It was like doing the same things, except it was like, wow, the first one was kind of like a dress rehearsal, you know? But you'll be happy to know that Wolfman got his lines right on both occasions.
That's reassuring.
He was great. I miss Wolfman. I really do. Yeah. So anyway, back to Selma Blair's gigundous titties.
That's the important things here, boldly going nowhere.
I don't know how we got off of those and onto Wolfman Jack and how they remind us of each other.
Back to business.
Yeah, all I can say is interviewing you is really easy.
Sorry, it is a complaint. I didn't mean it that way,
but
that sounded like a shut the fuck up West to me. I don't know. No.
I'm still pretty new with this.
I still want to tell you about Selma Blair's giant latex breasts.
By all means.
She did a scene where she titty whipped me in the movie with these. And then afterwards, you hear the guy, over there, his assistant director, goes, "Hey, should we get a safety on that?" And John Waters like, "No, those things are too expensive to waste on Wes's head." So, you know, I guess it really is a once in a lifetime opportunity to be titty whipped by Selma Blair.
And it's such a shame that of all the prosthetic breasts in the world, that woman from Total Recall gets all the credit.
Well, hers were. I don't know what hers were like up close, but Selma's were spectacular. She could be standing there on the set all day long wearing this thing. It's like she was wearing a parka.
Right next to the hands and the Hollywood feet, there's the breasts.
They really should. I mean, is that out of the Senate?
No. I'm just.
In Baltimore, at the Senate Theater, they had her put her hands in the cement. And really, it would have been great to press those.
It's right there.
I don't think anyone did her boots, but Betty Grable did her legs, didn't she?
Did she? I think she did part of the leg. The gam, just the side of it, Betty Grable with the leg. Mike's getting a little call there. Do you have any questions for us, sir? I didn't do it. Acquitted.
No, actually, I believe I've asked all that I had. And I think all that's left to say is that it has been a pleasure. Is there anything that you'd like to plug? Anything that you're doing upcoming?
There'll be an episode of Veep coming up in the new season. Look for episode 2. I got a quick scene there with Julie Louis Dreyfus. She was wonderful. She was great. Hopefully, if you get a chance, get out there and play the expansion for Skyrim. It's Dragonborn.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to play the very demented and multi-eyed Hermaeus Mora. He's chock full of knowledge, but you wouldn't know it from his voice.
Hmm. Very nice. And Mike, do you have anything, any events upcoming that I also know about?
I think I'm slated for Survival, Breathing.
Wait a minute. Could we get Mike before we go to send us out with a song?
I was thinking about sending us out by asking Bane to tell Hermaeus that he ripped
you
off.
No, let's do the professional.
So Mike, step right up here. He's got his ukulele with him. His amazing talking ukulele.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. I've got so many songs to sing. How about this one? I really hate this song because it's boring. Why I wrote it, I'm not really sure. I thought it would be funny, but it's stupid. And I don't wanna sing it anymore. But now that I have started, I must finish. I only hope it doesn't go too long. You know, it could be worse. I could have written another verse, and then we'd have to hear more of this song. Oh no, I wrote another verse, just kidding.
Oh, okay.
And that's one of the worst examples of my musicianship. I really hate to run, but you know how kin are when they's waiting for you.
No, that's quite all right. Well, I think that'll do it.
Good.
Thank you so much for letting us into your room here.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
All right. No, thank you, Wes. You behave yourself much better than your fans would believe.
Why, thank you very much, but did I behave better than John St. John?
Mm. Mm. I'm going to say yes.
Oh, okay. That's the norm.
That is the norm.
So this has been Jordan Hazelwood alongside Sean Holmes for Boldly Going Nowhere. Thank you so much for joining us.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.